to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh, a place to chow down on topics relevant to writers of all kinds. Yeah, that introduction music is new. I used it for the first time last week. I probably shouldn't use new intro music halfway through a season, but, you know, sometimes you gotta switch things up to keep them interesting. I don't know. Anyway, hello, and welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh. I'm Marissa, and this is a weekly podcast in which I talk about a wide variety of writing-related topics and literature, be it fiction, nonfiction, and everything in between. I usually classify literature as fiction or nonfiction, but there are a few genres that I think defy categorization, such as poetry. And it makes sense. For example, I don't know about you, but I remember taking creative writing classes in school and being given the option of writing prose, which in some cases had to be fiction, and in other cases could be either fiction or nonfiction, or poetry. Now, you could probably make a case that a lot of poetry is nonfiction, or at least contains aspects of nonfiction, since a lot of poems are inspired by events that have actually occurred, the poet's memories, that type of thing. But what I want to ask is, why does everything have to be either one or the other? Poetry is one of the creative arts, after all, and good poetry has profound effects on a lot of people. As a result, if you want to put poetry in its own category, with a lot of different subcategories because there are so many different types of poetry, I think you should be allowed to do that. This week, I would like to focus on one of those subcategories of poetry, and like a lot of episodes of my show, this is only meant to give you a brief introduction, since there is a lot more that can be said than I can give you in an episode that's probably 15 to 20 minutes long. But I think it's the type of thing where, unless you write it yourself, you may not have a good understanding of what it is. I'll admit that it's not a type of poetry I necessarily had a good understanding of, but I'm aiming to change that with this episode, in which I'm going to talk about the limerick. Now, I never really thought about limericks until about a year ago, when I read In the Tall Grass, the short story written by Stephen King and Joe Hill. In that story, one of the ways the sister Becky tries to stay calm while she's wandering around in the tall grass is by reciting limericks. I think she'd written a paper on limericks for a college class. And I remember Edward Gorey being mentioned at one point. And you might have seen the Netflix version of the film In the Tall Grass. I think it premiered about a year and a half ago. I have to be honest, I preferred the story to the movie. I saw the movie first, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just old, but I actually had a hard time following what was going on in the screen during the parts that took place in nighttime because it was really dark, and that just annoys me when I'm watching a movie and it's so dark and I can't see what's going on. So I would say if you saw the movie In the Tall Grass and you didn't really care for it, you might have loved it, but if you didn't really like it, you should read the story because the story is really worthwhile. And even if you like the movie and haven't read the story, you might want to check that out as well. But anyway, getting back to Edward Gorey. I like Edward Gorey, and I had read a number of his illustrated stories before I read In the Tall Grass, but I didn't really know much about him and hadn't actually studied his writing style. So when I saw him mentioned in the Tall Grass, I was like, really? Edward Gorey writes limericks? So I've been wanting to go over limericks for some time. Although I'm probably not going to talk about Gorey again in this episode, just because I'd really like to devote a whole episode just to him at some point in the future. And besides, he didn't write exclusively in limericks. His most famous work is probably the Gashly Crumb Tinies, which wasn't written in limerick form, but some other prominent works of his, such as The Listing Attic, were. So if you're familiar with Gorey's work, you may already have some familiarity with limericks, whether or not you realize that's what they are when you read them. According to literarydevices.net, quote, "A limerick is a poem that consists of five lines in a single stanza with a rhyme scheme of ABBA. Most limericks are intended to be humorous, and many are considered bawdy, suggestive, or downright indecent. The subject of limericks is generally trivial or silly in nature." End quote. The article goes on to say that limericks are considered, quote, unquote, amateurish or quote unquote lowbrow in comparison with a lot of other forms of poetry, largely because they're short and a lot of them can be memorized fairly easily, and the subject matter is often meant to amuse. However, I've said before on this podcast that I think making a distinction between highbrow and lowbrow forms of art is bullshit, and I'm going to reiterate that again this week. If anything, limericks can serve a number of valuable purposes that I'll get into in a bit, and they can be adapted in ways that appeal both to adults, those would be the bawdy and indecent ones I was just referring to, and to children, such as you may see in nursery rhymes. Going back to what I was just saying about how you're probably familiar with lyrics but may not have realized it, powerpoetry.org points out that Hickory Dickory Dock is a limerick. And I feel kind of like an idiot for not realizing that years ago, but to be fair, when you're 3 or 4 years old and hearing Hickory Dickory Dock, the person reading it to you is probably not saying, "Do you know what that is? That's called a limerick." Despite the appeal that limericks may hold for different groups of people, they do have a pretty particular five-line rhyme scheme. Specifically, I just mentioned that limericks adhere to an ABBA structure, which you may think means ABBA as in the Swedish band responsible for timeless classics such as Dancing Queen, Waterloo, Mamma Mia, SOS. I'm sorry, I had to put that in because I really do like their music. And I doubt I'm the first person to see that rhyme scheme and think of the band ABBA. But I digress. Basically, in a limerick, lines 1 and 2, A and A, rhyme with each other. Lines 3 and 4, B and B, also rhyme with each other. And according to poets.org, line 5, which is another A, quote, "either repeats the first line or rhymes with it," end quote. So ABBA breaks down to A-A-B-B-A. In an article I'm including a link to in the notes for this episode called How to Write a Limerick, Catherine Luck points out that the A lines are longer than the B lines, although each set of lines has the same length. Specifically, both A lines and B lines are written in what's known as anapests, and these are groups of three syllables, the first two of which are unstressed and the third of which is stressed. In limericks, the A lines consist of three anapests each, and the B lines consist of two anapests each. If that sounds confusing, you can think of it this way. Lines 1, 2, and 5 each have 9 syllables, and the last words of each of those lines rhyme, and lines 3 and 4 also have 6 syllables each, and the last words of these lines also rhyme with each other. So, now that you know about the structure of limericks, what does one actually write limericks about? If you're trying your hand at limerick writing for the first time, fortunately, there's a strategy you can follow. Luck points out that the first line of many limericks usually mentions the name of the person and something about them, such as where they're from. A famous example of this is, you may have heard one that starts off, "There once was a man from Nantucket," written by anonymous, meaning that we don't know the name of the person who wrote it, so we just credit it to Anonymous. It's probably good to remember that if you're going to write a limerick about a person from a certain place, the name of the place will probably decide what the other A lines on 2 and 5 will rhyme with. As for line 5, Luck calls it the quote-unquote punchline and notes that the best ones usually will come as a surprise to the audience. As for what to put in lines 2 through 4, you can describe what your character looks like or how they act, for example, or maybe something that they did. Luck explains that this is where you can really have fun with your humor and your use of words, and don't be overly concerned with grammar. As Luck explains, quote, "Being witty is more important than being grammatically correct. In fact, breaking the rules of grammar can make the poem even funnier," end quote. To give you an example of a limerick that adheres to this pattern, here's one from Edward Lear, a British poet who's widely credited with having popularized the limerick in the 19th century. Quote, "There was an old man with a beard who said, 'It is just as I feared. Two owls and a hen, four larks and a wren, have all built their nests in my beard,'" end quote. However, once you become more comfortable with limerick writing, you can experiment more with your subject matter or focus heavily on wordplay. You can write limericks for satirical purposes and poke fun at a famous person, such as the poet W.H. Auden did in this one, which I found in an article by David Stewart called "The Limerick is Furtive and Mean." Auden wrote, quote, "T.S. Eliot is quite at a loss when club women bustle across at literary teas, crying, 'What, if you please, did you mean by the mill on the floss?'" End quote. Limericks can also be used for educational purposes. I found several websites devoted to science-related limericks, and I personally think most of them are great. Not only are they enjoyable to read, even if you're not much of a science person, but if you're a science teacher, you can use short, humorous poems about scientific topics to help make that type of material more accessible to your students. To demonstrate, here's a good one by David Morin, which is on a page called Physics Limericks, which I'm also posting a link to in the notes. Quote, "One morning, while eating my Wheaties, I felt the earth move neath my feeties. The cause for alarm was a long lever arm, at the end of which grinned Archimedes." End quote. You can also use limericks as puzzles to stimulate your readers' minds. For example, you can describe something in a limerick, and ideally, the reader can guess what you're describing. I'm personally bad at guessing things like that, but I'm just throwing that out there in case you or the people you know enjoy that type of thing. So you can go online and you can look up these riddle limericks. And as I mentioned earlier, there are numerous websites devoted to limericks with adult themes, which I'm not including any examples of here because I like to keep my podcast episodes relatively clean, aside from a little cussing here and there. But I think it's important to stress that even though limericks follow a pattern, structure-wise, what you end up writing about and how you word it is really up to you. And you can write something that shows how clever your use of language is and how witty you are. So let me know what you think. I actually have an idea. If you write a limerick after listening to this episode and would like me to read it on the show, send it over to me at marissadelefarfalle@gmail.com and I will credit you. I'll make sure everybody knows that you wrote it. You can also follow me on Twitter at @marissad13 and on Instagram at www.instagram.com/MarissaDF13. Also, I mentioned in last week's episode that I'm not going to be using Patreon anymore, and that I'll be using Buy Me a Coffee going forward instead. So, if you go to www.buymeacoffee.com/MarissaDF13 and buy me a coffee, I will give you a shout out to show my appreciation in an upcoming episode. And if you decide to become a member, I will not only give you a shout out in an upcoming episode, but I will also give you the opportunity to make an unlimited number of suggestions about what you would like to see in future episodes. And I will credit you every time I do an episode based on a topic that you gave me. So on Buy Me a Coffee, you can either make a one-time donation or you can become a member. And finally, I would really appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, as it'll help a lot more people find out about this show. Until next time, thank you so much for listening and for all of the great support and feedback. I really hope you liked this episode. And if you didn't know much about limericks before this, I hope I've inspired you to try writing some. But even if you don't, I hope you had fun listening. I had fun researching this one, and I think it goes to show that even though limericks may look straightforward on the surface, there's a lot more to them than meets the eye, and they can be used for some pretty sophisticated purposes. So, as writers and readers, we shouldn't take them for granted. On that note, have a great week, stay safe, and peace out.
This podcast is written and produced by Marissa Delle Farfalle and brought to you by Anchor. Anchor is the easiest way to make a podcast. Learn more at www.anchor.fm.